I'm here to tell you about Naptime Radio. It's a show for moms and dads, and these chicks are super cool.
Mac Daddy and Damia.
And they want you to listen.
Yes, we want it. We want it so bad.
I know you do. Heather and Kate offer helpful info for parents with their power naps. Oh, and did I mention? These chicks are sexy as hell, y'all.
Let's ride that train.
All I need is a ticket.
Let's eliminate one article of clothing for one meal. How about that?
Oh, now it's a party. So go to naptimeradio.com or click on the logo available on our site.
Nailed it!
Chase the sun and get crazy, have some fun. And if you're on the run, we're chasing the sun.
Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. This is episode number 36, and people listening to the show who've been listening for a long time probably have heard me say this before, but this is a really big fucking deal for me. I've been telling you guys about it for a little over a month now, but here with me, as you see in the description, is the wonderful Dr. J. Sute. How are you, doctor?
Great, Justin. How you doing?
I'm awesome. And I don't know if I told you this, Dr. J, but when I was a kid, I was a humongous fan of Loveline, and I just love the idea of a comedian and a doctor talking. And so when I was in Hartford, Connecticut, there at the Funny Bone, and you and I crossed paths, and you said you would love to do the podcast with me, what you probably didn't know is that you made a childhood dream come true, and then you made it even better that you're a comedian and a doctor, and I do a podcast for parents, and your specialty, if you would, or what is it called, your focus?
Yeah.
Is pediatrics.
Right.
So I am in my mind, even though that may not be anywhere what it sounds like or anything like that, but in my mind, it's like I am on Loveline and I'm doing my dream. So thank you. Thank you very much for doing this.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you've been doing, just to give everybody a little bit of a background on you, Dr. J, is that okay if I call you Dr. J? Is that cool?
Absolutely. As long as Julius Irving doesn't mind, I'm okay with it.
So what if he sends us a cease and desist? That would be really
I don't know. Then I might have to get some lawyers involved. You know?
That would be really awkward and uncomfortable. But anyway, so you've been in pediatrics for 20 years, right?
20 years, yeah.
And what made you decide to go into pediatrics?
Well, I don't like old people, primarily. They come in with a lot of problems. And kids, at least they usually start off fresh. You know, they don't come in with a problem list of complaints 10 things long. So I didn't realize at the time, though, that the kids come with parents. That was something I should have thought through a little bit further.
So that is what you're saying is that's the more difficult part about your job?
Is dealing with the parents. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm pretty good at getting a kid to relax and calm down. I'm a lot less good at getting a parent to relax and calm down.
Well, and it's funny, too, because that was one of the reasons, and it's what made me so happy when you said, I would love to do your show, because, and I think you mean it with the best of intentions, but you're like,
of course.
There are so many parents out there, that, and we, myself included, that are just stupid, and you, what happens is, I believe on our side, and you tell me then your side, is that I believe on our side that we have this idea of, well, you're a father, too, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take that away from you, but anyway, but we think that, well, this is my child, so I know what's best for my child. And then you couple that with this weird societal thing that if a guy comes by and he's going to, you know, rehang the door or re-landscape your front yard, he could just drop all these terms. And this is a guy who probably had a C average in high school. And you're just like, okay, yeah, where do I sign the check? Or, you know, same thing with a mechanic or something like that. But for whatever reason, a doctor, one of the most highest educated officials in our culture, is like, I'm going to need a second opinion, though. I've read online that...
That's right. Yeah, we love the Google and the WebMD here. Yeah.
That's a big hit in your industry.
Oh yeah, you love when a parent Googles childhood immunizations and then the horror show of all the bad things that have ever happened since the dawn of man pop up. So It doesn't. There's no good website that says, you know, we've extended, we've doubled the life expectancy in the last 100 years because of childhood vaccinations that used to take us out in infancy.
So you would like to take Jenny McCarthy and put her on a dinghy and just shift her out into the Pacific Ocean if you could?
No question about it. If that kid has any problems, it's because of the silicone that was leaking from his mother's breast while he was in her uterus.
Wow, Dr. J pulling no punches. I love it already. This is the best. I'm so happy. Well, that leads me actually to one of my questions that I had is that in your experience, what is the biggest mistake or misunderstanding parents have about their kids and or what you can do for them?
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, everybody thinks their kid is special, you know, and even with the mundane things, like it can they'll come in and I'll say, "I'm sorry, it's just a cold," and they're like, "How can it just be a cold?" It's like my kid is so goddamn special; he can't just have a cold, you know. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I've been a pediatrician 20 years, and I know kids are special, but I've never seen one shit a gemstone. You know, formula in, diamond out. I've never seen it. Never once.
And so they don't, parents don't like the word common be associated. Right. Like common cold does not have to my child. So that's a weird thing that I'm perplexed by that they want them to have some form of influenza or some like malaria or.
Yeah. And by the way, it's February and it's fucking flu season. Yeah. Okay. All right. It's flu season every February. Now's not the time to be up my ass getting your flu vaccine. It should have been done in October.
Oh,
all right.
All right. Good to know.
It's a little public service announcement. By the way, your flu vaccine, it's kept you well.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I've never had a flu vaccine that I'm aware of, probably when I was a kid, but not as an adult. And I've always been that stupid dude who's like, oh, well, it always makes you sick. And I even said this to you.
Yes.
I go, is it going to make me sick? For a little bit, because it was it's so stupid that I'm even doing it myself, but it was my layperson's understanding that they give you like almost a wounded version of the flu virus and that still makes you a little sick and then your body takes over, builds an antibody. Am I wrong about that?
It's inactivated, so it's not really just wounded. It's dead.
Oh, okay. And so the body just sees
nothing
it and
about
figures out what it is.
There's nothing about the injectable flu vaccine that can give you the flu.
Right. And so...
You panicked because the news was saying you were heading into Flu-a-Palooza down in Raleigh-Durham, and you panicked and you wanted flu vaccine.
It was Alabama, but yeah, Alabama had there.
Right.
And so we did it, and he was nice enough to give me a flu vaccine there in Hartford, and I didn't have a fever. I didn't have the slightest bit. I did have, like you said, a little discomfort in my shoulder, but well worth it, and you have converted me, and now I will have me and my children have their flu vaccines every year in October. Because
great.
Now why is it that the flu has a season like an apple? Like I don't understand how that
it
works out.
It rotates around the globe. I mean, what's going on in Asia in February and March and April, you know, coming up is what's going to come around and hit us next year.
Oh.
So they're able to look at that and figure out what strains to put into the vaccine. Between April and August, when we start giving the shots, they kind of have an idea of what to expect.
So their flu season is in the spring and ours is in the winter.
Yep.
So and that's another question of mine is that does a kid being outside without a coat or getting wet or cold, does that have anything to do with them getting sick? Or is it because of just so happens that our flu season is in winter that we have that thought?
Well, I think anything that stresses the body makes you more apt to catch something. Mm-hmm. All right. So if it's cold stress, if it's, you know, mental stress, any kind of stress on the body that, you know, takes away from the body kind of, you know, maintaining itself can leave you open to catching stuff. But, you know, going outside without a coat, not wearing a hat and getting an ear infection, I'll agree with that stuff just for the sake of the parents so they can get their kids to wear a coat. Drives me crazy to see kids in New England with shorts on in January coming into my office with flip-flops and crap. So,
well,
sometimes I'll back up the parents just to back them up.
I imagine, though, it would drive you just as crazy because here's where that question is coming from for me is that as the stay-at-home father, when I'm on the road and I take my son to preschool, it's 65 degrees in the wintertime there, and I don't wrap them up like they live live in New England in the same time of year. I understand, even though I spent my entire life living in California, I've traveled elsewhere, and I know what real fucking cold is. And it's right. insulting to people such as yourself who live in a cold climate that people are running around with earmuffs and North Face parkas on when it's 65 fucking degrees outside, and it's on the news. I mean, anybody who watches Jimmy Kimmel Live has seen him poke fun that we get a little cold spell, and it drops down below 50, and we're like, oh, fuck! Like, it's the second coming. It's all going to end. And they even had this quote where they were talking to kids about how cold it was, and this kid actually said, I would like to live in Chicago, somewhere where it's warm. That's how stupid Californians are when it comes to weather. And so that's my thought, is that I know that part, that it, you know, you don't want a kid who's living in Denver to be going in flip-flops, cargo shorts, and a T-shirt on December 16th to school. Right. But in California, if it's between 65 and 70, it's not neglect if I don't have a hooded sweatshirt on my kid if he's just wearing long pants and a T-shirt. Am I wrong on this?
No, I think you got a good point there.
Yeah. Because I'm so sick.
Yeah, they're going to overheat or something, you know?
Yeah, well, that's my mom, who's a respiratory therapist, was her big thing when we first had Jacob, my older son, was that she was like, you know, don't overbundle the kid because people always worry about babies getting cold. And she said, but I think that then when they do feel like a little breeze or something, it makes them more susceptible to it. But I think that's also like wives' tale of like, oh, if you get cold, then you'll catch a cold kind of thing. But, yeah. I mean, do you think that people overheat or overbundle their babies?
Well, let me tell you, I had this baby. She's about three now. But when she was a newborn, the mother is from Mongolia. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that has to do with it, but... this girl came in the first couple visits. She had about six layers of clothing on. Getting her undressed to wear was like opening a nesting doll, and there was a little baby in the middle. I swear to God, this kid had so much layers on, and it probably more clothes in weight on the baby than the baby weight. Mm-hmm. So people do have a tendency to overdo it. So, but they overdo everything, you know.
Yeah, and I think that must be another frustrating part about your occupation is that it's a natural. I find myself fighting that urge because I've seen what happens when people are, and I'm being very general and vague about this, but I've seen people that have been overprotective, not obviously in health or anything like that, but as far as like other people interacting with their kids and just don't let anything ever wrong happen to them. And I've seen those people grow up to become adults and really struggle in the real world. So I have this inclination where even though I have that same like instinct to go, oh, well, this is bad. And I go, it's okay. Bad shit can happen to your kid every now and then, and it's not that big a deal. But while we're on this subject of like cold and sickness, because 'tis the season and all, but because this is what also started yours and my relationship is that I have my best friend, Kevin. He just had his son. He's been a guest on the show, and they had some issues where their son was getting a cold a lot. And, you know, I told him, I said, well, you hear, use the nose sucker that they got from the hospital.
Right.
And his wife did some Googling, as you're very fond of.
Of course, they all do.
And she found a little thing that said she can only suck his nose four times in a day. And he says, how say you to this, Mr. Worsham? And I go, and this is where I felt like I was in a momentary situation of embodying Dr. J. And then I'm just looking at them going, what kind of a fucking question is that? I have two children that I've spent their entire babyhood year sucking their nose every 5 to 10 minutes. If there was a noise coming from that nose, I would suck it out. And the reason I did that is because my mom, who's a respiratory therapist, said we would constantly get babies brought into a hospital, and all they have is a common cold, but the parents are so freaked out that they don't know what to do, and all they do is they give the babies to us, and we just suck their nose the entire time that they're there. So she told me when my son was born, she goes, the more you could keep his nose clear of boogers and things like that, the less likely he will be to get cold, because when they're babies, and now I'm feeling like I'm getting up on a soapbox here, but I hope stop me if
I'm
wrong.
I'll correct you if you're wrong.
I appreciate it.
So far, you're fine.
So with a baby, sinus passages and nose, the nasal cavity and stuff like that is so tiny that even what is a normal size booger to us can just like lock that down. You add to that
a lot of noise.
Yeah, and you add to that unless I'm mistaken here, is that babies don't really know to breathe through their mouth until they're like 6 or 7 months old. Is that wrong?
I don't know. I think if their nose was – I mean, I've had babies that have been born with you know, nasal obstructions that are smart enough to breathe through their mouth. So
okay.
I think when need be, they will breathe.
They will, right. That's what I'm saying. It's not like if you plug their nose, they're just going to die. Like,
that's right. Exactly.
Like a spider in a bathtub or something. but it's not a thing just automatically, we do it and go, oh, I have to stop breathing through my nose because I know it's stuffed up. Whereas that they will try. And then you add to the fact that when they eat, they can't breathe through their nose. And so she goes, it gets them stressed and it gets them more sick.
Suck away. There is no limitation. As long as you're not causing trauma, you suck the boogers when there's boogers. Right. I can't imagine there's some kind of limit on that. It's not like a pitch count.
you're gonna throw out his left nostril. He's no longer going to be able to close strong anymore. He could be a relief pitcher at best.
And babies sneeze. I tell parents, oh, the baby sneezes all the time. Well, you know what? The baby has to blow its nose too. That's just a baby blowing its nose without a tissue.
Yeah.
Wipe it up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's my other thing is that, because while we're on this subject, is that, you know, you as a parent, you hear a lot when you go into the doctor's office about, you know, oh, well, a cold is a virus. There's nothing really that we could do about virus. But I know that a fancy buzzword for a lot of parents is antibiotics. Like everybody goes in expecting antibiotics have become for parents this magical pill that you just throw in your kid. And no matter what ails them, in 2 or 3 days, they'll be better.
Right, because in 2 or 3 days, if it's a virus, they're going to be better too.
Exactly. And I feel, and I'm sure that much to your chagrin, I feel that there might be pediatricians just giving antibiotics to people just to shut them up and walk them away, even though they know it's not really doing it. And they might as well be sugar pills. Am I crazy on this?
Exactly right. I mean, my patients are pretty good at what, you know, I'm going to prescribe for. I mean, I never prescribe antibiotics without seeing a kid. You know, you're never going to have a parent call me and say, you know, he's got green snot or he's pulling on his ears and I'm just going to start antibiotics. I mean, they've got to have something wrong with them. Otherwise, the antibiotics aren't going to work when we need them to work. So you do have to be somewhat judicial about when you use them. And green snot doesn't mean anything. And anybody who wakes up in the morning with their snot sitting in the back of their nose and the back of their throat is going to blow their nose and it's going to be green in the morning.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So people get over it. Plus, you know, there's a lot of pressure with working parents. Both parents work. You know, they want the kid better today because they don't want to take another day off. And whether the kid goes to daycare or not, they're still paying for it. So, you know, there's a lot of other pressures that have nothing to do with the kid's health that are, you know, bringing them to my office. So,
wow. Kudos to you for having that awareness. That's an awareness that I never even thought of, you know, that it is. If you're, I mean, cause I don't have a traditional 9-to-5 job, but that makes a lot of sense that people are like, even subconsciously, they're not consciously aware of that, but they're just like, oh, I got to go back to work. I just want to make, cause I have that. I just like, if I could limit the suffering, this would be so much, you know, better. So, to get back to the antibiotics thing, when is there a situation where, like, what warrants an antibiotic? It's not a flu either, right?
No. The flu, you can catch the flu, and then it can, because it's a bad virus, you can get secondary infections. You can get pneumonia, and you can get ear infections, you know, as a result of the flu, just like you can with any virus. So most of the time, it's, you know, ear infections, strep throat, bronchitis, pneumonia, sinus infections, which bigger kids can get, but babies have such tiny sinuses, they can't really get sinus infections. So, but they usually get the ear infections. If their little sinuses fill up, then things back up and their ears get infected. And there's like a 500% increase in ear infections in the last 20 years because of both working parents, lots of daycares. You didn't see this kind of volume of sickness and ear infections before daycares became necessary. Yeah. You know, it's a great time to be a pediatrician, let me tell you.
Because that's all I feel as a parent. Like, I brought the kid there, and, you know, it's a thing that you don't really know, like, unless you have somebody who's just been through it, because usually people forget about it. But if you have a friend who's got a kid that's like a year or two older than you, then they'll go, oh, they're going to be sick, like, the first 6 months you take them to preschool. And that, it's just like, are you fucking kidding me? And now I've been at this preschool for almost a year with my son. And if I drop him off and I just hear some kid in the corner like, oh, oh, like sounding like an 87-year-old smoker, I'm just like, you son of a bitch. Like, who is that inconsiderate that just does that? But the reality is, like what you just described, is that these people also have to work. And it just so happens that I take my kid to preschool so he could socialize with kids and then also get a little education. But I could really take care of him all day. So that's easy, you know, easily done. But not all parents have that option. And I guess I need to learn to be more sensitive to that. And it's not like it's not really that bad if you think about it. It just creates an inconvenience for a few days. And because I have more than one child, that few days can turn into a few weeks while these bugs jump from me to my wife to my kid to the other kid. Just live off
of us. I tell parents right off the bat, if they have a kid who's, you know, it's their first year out there, they're under, say, 18 months, if they go, you know, to preschool or daycare, they're going to catch between September and April 8 to 10 viral illnesses, one every 3 weeks. So they're going to have it. They're going to be sick for about 5 to 7 days, maybe still coughing, have two, three good days in between, and then they're going to be sick again. But the payoff is they have a perfect attendance record when they go to kindergarten. Yeah. So you know, that's what happens. So
yeah, I like that. The preschool really is just to give like an Arnold Schwarzenegger workout to their immune system.
It is. And you know, that one kid you see coughing, that's like patient one. That's like Gwyneth Paltrow. And it just spreads from there. So,
yeah, no hypochondriac can watch Contagion and live the rest.
I'll tell you, that movie, that'll scare the shit out. And you know what? What's scary about that is that's exactly how it goes down.
Yeah.
It happens too. It was really, I've seen Hollywood movies about outbreaks and stuff, but yeah, that's really how it's going to happen.
Do those movies kind of become
Marfan and Lassa fever confined to Africa? That's our main objective.
Do you find those movies to be more comedic because of your expertise? Like you're just like, yeah, that's funny.
Some of them are, but that one was pretty good.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel a lot differently about Gwyneth Paltrow now.
That made her unattractive.
Yeah, you know.
So this is what I kind of do with my kid in colds, and tell me if I'm wrong, is I kind of load up on the vitamins. Like you get the and my pediatrician recently told me that, you know, as long as I just double up whatever the bottle says if they're sick on the vitamins, because I figure you can't OD on vitamins. And she corrected me and said, well, as long as it doesn't have iron, then you're okay, because otherwise your kid's going to become magnetic. So she's like,
iron in the vitamins is actually one of the people in their house have like two dangerous things that they just have lying around that potentially, if a kid took too much of it, could really hurt them. Iron containing vitamins is one, and Tylenol is the other. So
really,
those two things, yeah, iron containing vitamins, if a kid like took a, you know, a whole bottle of you know, vitamins, and I'm talking from experience too, because I'm pretty sure it was 6 or 7 years of age, I thought if one pal's vitamin is good, well then the whole bottle must be great, and it turned me into Superman.
Right.
And then I found myself at Bridgeport Hospital having myself charcoaled and my stomach pumped. So iron containing vitamins, dangerous.
Yeah.
And Tylenol will rot your liver, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Is that in excess? Is that
There's one study that showed and I can't remember which country did the study, but there was a huge increase in the suicide by Tylenol. And all they did was change the Tylenol packaging from having it in a bottle of pills to blister packs. And they saw almost a 60% reduction in Tylenol suicide, just because you have to push the fucking pills through the blister pack. Instead of just pouring out the bottle and taking a handful, they found a 60% reduction in Tylenol suicides just by putting the medicine in blister packs rather than a bottle.
I'm so sad because I've never laughed so hard at suicide, but it's kind of funny that it's like...
Yeah, oh, you get to about the 10th pill in the blister pack and you say, ah, fuck this. You
but
know?
Any parent who's had small children around Christmas time and you've had to open those, you know, injected plastic like you need a tack welder to get cut into the damn thing, like only imagine that on the opposite end of that we've saved a lot of suicides, but I think a lot of fingers have been lost with steak knives trying to jab them into some kind Cars themed toy.
So beware of the Tylenol and the iron containing vitamins. But in answer to your question, you know, certain vitamins, especially fat soluble vitamins like E and D and A, you can give too much of.
Oh, really?
The water soluble ones, if you overdo it, like vitamin C, you can't take too much vitamin C because it's water soluble, and whatever your body doesn't need, it's just going to piss out. So, you know, doing, you know, more vitamin C in the wintertime, you know, is, you know, not a bad idea. I do it. You know, I read once that, you know, the great scientist Linus Pauling used to take 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day. And I figured if it was good for him, it's good for me. But that's the only vitamin I take. I try to tell my patients that, you know, if they eat the right foods and stuff, and we check their blood every year to make sure they're getting enough iron and stuff. But if they're eating good foods, they, you know, they don't need to depend on Fred Flintstone for anything, you know.
Okay.
So, but, you know, a little extra vitamin C is fine. But some of, like I said, the fat-soluble vitamins, you can do too much of sometimes.
And is it true that vitamin C does help fight off? Does that help the immune system? Or
who the fuck knows, Justin? I don't. All I know is I've been exposed to every germ there is in the last 20 years, and I don't get sick anymore. And it could be the vitamin C. Or it could just be that I've caught everything there is to catch.
That your life is a preschool. That's probably maybe just as likely, but you're saying it can't hurt. I love it.
Did I tell you I got pissed on by a 10-day-old yesterday?
No, I can't wait to hear it. What was that 10-day-old carrying?
I don't know. All I know is I was trying to listen to his heart, and the next thing I felt some warm wetness on my elbow. He got me.
You know, that's funny. I never thought of that. Is that, do you always have to have an extra button-up shirt and a tie at the office just in case?
You know, not really. But ironically, it was the day I picked up my dry cleaning, so I did have a spare shirt out in the car. It just worked out that way.
That's awesome.
We have like scrub shirts and stuff because parents get puked and pissed on and stuff all the time. And sometimes they need a costume change as well. It's dangerous work, I tell you. There's bodily fluids coming at you in all directions.
So
if there's an orifice, something's shooting out of it.
that is something that both pediatricians and parents are well aware of. I'm imagining that we are all too familiar, especially with rectal fluids. That is just that's my favorite thing about going out on the road and talking about being a dad primarily in my act, because I tell people like I love poop stories, and everybody always has one that they, you know, they'll come up to me after the show. And there was one lady, I was here in Omaha last night, and she actually came up to me and said that, she goes, you know, you said you like poop stories. She's like, I got one. She goes, my daughter, every time she'd poop, we were potty training her, and so we would try and say, hey, did you poop? And she would always stick her hand in her pants and then pull it out with shit all over it and go, yeah, I pooped, and then wipe it off on her mom, and it all happened so quick. And I go, and I asked her, I go, now, was it a thing like where she's doing it because she knew it was gross? She was like, no, that's the weirdest part about it, is that she's so desensitized to it or hasn't become aware that that is a disgusting thing yet, that she's just like, oh, well, I'll just put this here. Like, this, I'll put this on my mom. And all the kids that make cave art, that like there was one that they'd said that another parent came by here in Omaha and said that they had came into the crib. And the daughter had like it had an explosive.
All over the wall. Once they take their diaper off, you're screwed.
Right, and then she was actually eating it, like she had had it in her mouth, and like both the parents were like, oh, like they're about to die.
Yeah, we get those calls. We get those calls about, you know, poop in the mouth. Kids will put anything in their mouth. Had a family that went up to a cottage in Maine, and their 2-year-old crawling around found a used condom on the floor, which he put in his mouth.
Yeah.
So you might want to do a little sweep of the floor if you got kids, guys, before.
You know what I love is that you're a doctor and that you primarily your job is filled with what is pretty much most people who aren't sleep deprived would go, that's kind of fucking common sense.
Listen, I got a call once from the grocer's dairy department to ask my advice nurse if it was okay to get her kid some Sunny Delight. I don't know what these people. I've been asked what the gluten content of the communion wafer is, because celiac disease can cause problems, and First Holy Communion's coming up. So I mean, I get the weirdest freaking calls.
Oh, God bless you for giving him your cell phone. God bless you.
I've been called at 2:00 in the morning by a woman whose kid had chicken pox, who wanted to know if it was okay for her to go to the Memorial Day parade the next morning. 2:00 in the morning. That's a question I need to have.
Oh, that makes me feel so much better, because my pediatrician was nice enough to give me her cell number one time because she was away at a convention. And my son had mild pneumonia, and so she was trying to prescribe him an oral steroid. And my son cannot take medicine. Like, it's really frustrating because he vomits it up if it doesn't taste delicious. And it's frustrating on multiple levels. One, because I want to help him feel better. And two, because I'm like, do you have any idea what the shit I had to take tasted like?
Let me tell you, that oral steroid stuff is some nasty, nasty stuff. Oh, one of the worst tasting things you can try to get into a child.
It's horrible. Like, and it's...
I've worn it a couple of times trying to give it at the office. And, you know, my older daughter, when she was little, you know, she reached a point around the age of five that, you know, she would rather take her Tylenol up her ass than in her mouth. So we wouldn't even fight her anymore at that point. So she'd get a fever, she'd just bend over and take it like a man or a woman, whatever. Then when she wanted to do chewables, but she was, you know, older, she had to do like four chewables, which she would break into quarter sizes. So there'd be 16 pill fragments on the table. And goddamned, if we weren't 13, 16ths of the way through, she'd be puking. So some kids are tough with medicine.
Yeah. Well, we found a way. So he would take the syrup and it was a flavored syrup, which I just thought, and you're right with that steroid, the flavor is just... It's horrible. It's like a BB gun at World War II. It's just like, it makes no sense, you know? And they, so we went back, I called her and said, we can't get it into him. And then she prescribed an inhaler steroid, but, he got sick again, this last fall, I think it was. And so we took him in there and he was coughing a lot. He's got like respiratory issues. And so she said, okay, well, we'll have to give him an oral steroid, 'cause I need to up the dosage or whatever. And I go, well, he can't get that, you know, the liquid down. She's like, I'll tell you what, I'll give it to you as a pill. And
yeah,
you can
dissolvable
break it up.
Pill?
Yeah. Well, it's not a dissolvable. Well, I guess any pill would be dissolvable. But
no, but they actually make the oral steroid now comes in a dissolvable pill. You just have to get it in their mouth and it melts on their tongue and done.
But you still have that horrible taste, right?
No, it actually, they figured it out. That's a lot of the kids, I'm now using it's called an ODT, oral disintegrating tablet.
Uh-huh.
All you got to do is mix it with spit and it dissolves right away. They don't even have to chew it. So once you get it in their mouth, they keep the mouth shut. It doesn't get spit out like a liquid would.
Good to know. Wow, that's awesome. Because she gave us the pill and she goes, you can mix it in with some ice cream or whatever. And I was like, oh, great. And she said, because my son he calls it grape flavored medicine because we use the grape Advil. And that's about the only medicine that he enjoys. Like, he's like, oh, that's good. You know,
my daughters only would drink purple medicine. Didn't have to be grape, had to be purple. And for parents out there, you can add blue food coloring to red medicine to make it purple if you have oddball children like I did.
And so I did it, and he was upstairs getting a bath, and so I was trying to, I mashed up the pill. Like, I felt like an old alchemist, like I'm, you know, with a mortar and pestle. Like, I was like, you know, and I make it into a powder, and I mix it in with some jelly, and I go, well, I was just about to take it up, and I'm like, you know what, maybe I should try this just to be safe. And I took one little dose in my mouth, and I was like, I go, oh, crap, you know. But here's what the little trick I found is that if I didn't mash up the powder and mix it in with the jelly, I literally gave him the pill like a dog. So I would cut the pill to where it was just a tiny little chunk, and I would stick it in the middle of some jelly on a spoon, and then we'd give him like a juice or something to drink, give it to him in that spoon and say, just swallow, 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 swallow. And then we could finally get him to take the oral steroid in the pill form. And so
ask for the oral disintegrating tablet next time.
I will definitely.
Ask for it by name.
It will definitely do that. Well, and which kind of leads me to my next question for you is that, how do you know as a parent that you've chosen a good pediatrician?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because I mean, to give you a chance to think about it, is that I kind of feel that there's no real way going into it because here's what I learned. My parents were both kind of in the medical field. My mom's a respiratory therapist. My dad was a biomed tech. And so we always had registered nurses and cardiologists around at Christmas parties. And I saw these people partying, getting drunk, getting high. And so I have a different perception of the medical profession. I have
a realistic one.
Exactly. Yeah. That these are just fucking people.
We do a job during the day, but we're regular people at night.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's unfair. I think people have an unfair expectation of their doctor to think that he doesn't go home and pound back a few whiskey sours before he goes to sleep after he's been shit and pissed on all day or whatever. And
or we go out and do stand-up comedy at night to blow steam off.
Exactly. So my point was, my thought always was that, you know, I understand also that what comes with that is just like with anything, as scary as it may seem, is that there are people that are bad at their job, just like any other profession out there.
Right.
But so what I think is that since you can't really control that level of awareness, unfortunately, I think that it's almost becomes like a dating situation where
you
really go in there and go, who do I have the best vibe with? Who when they talk to me, I feel like they're kind of saying things that I'm already thinking. And that's what we landed on with our pediatrician, Dr. Bloom. Okay. She's amazing. I love her. She's great. She gets my humor. She likes that I go, listen, there's nothing wrong with the kid, but I just want to double check. She's appreciative of that and stuff. So am I right on that?
Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right. We do, prenatal visits one evening a week where, couples come in to interview me, meet with me. I go over stuff with them so they can get a feel for, my philosophy. And, you don't want to, pick your pediatrician out of the phone book or out of your insurance book. People should go out and interview a couple people to see who they have the dating chemistry with, because I'm very serious when it comes to my job, but I'm always going to goof around, and people have to know that, I went into pediatrics because I'm a little quirky and goofy and the kids like me, and I do a good job at what I do too. So you get the best of both worlds. But had a couple come in, Indian couple. We have a lot of them around here. I always ask, how they got my name, and this woman says, "Oh, we saw you open for Darren Carter, the party starter at the Funny Bone." And I just said, probably not the best way to pick your pediatrician, but I'm glad you came by to meet me,
That's great, because Darren's also been on the show, so the listeners know Darren Carter party starter. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was one of the funniest things I ever heard.
I love that. Well, it's a conversation that, people who have seen your act, it's much like what I would akin my act. It's the same perspective, that I approach to fatherhood. You have kind of like an angry, what the fuck attitude about being a pediatrician when you're on stage.
Right.
And it's that kind of release that it gives you, so you can go to work the next day and have a lot of fun with the kids, or I can go home and hug my kids and my wife, exactly. Kind of thing. And there were, the conversation came up that it's like, well, I don't know if I'd want him to be my pediatrician. And I was like, I beg to differ, because I know exactly who this guy is. That's exactly. And if I'm okay with that, then great. All the more reason to have this, because there's nothing being hidden. He puts it out there, exactly what he thinks, what he feels. And that's kind of where I came up with that idea of it being like a dating situation where
that's a good analogy, actually, the prenatal visits. Speed date.
Exactly. You and your pediatrician are just seeing each other right now. You haven't really assigned them to a contract.
And believe me, I can identify the uptight parents before the child even comes out of their body.
Oh, so, yeah.
I make little notes on the prenatal sheets saying, oh, boy, this one's going to be a party.
So I wish
the prenatal visits worked both ways. They're coming to check me out. Unfortunately, at the end of the visit, I can't turn to the couple and say, I'm sorry, I don't think this is going to work out for me.
Here's
a couple other names that you should look into.
Really? Is that because of the Hippocratic Oath, or is that?
I guess so. I mean, they can pick me, but I can't say, there are certain situations where you can, people don't want to immunize their kids. They're against immunizations. And I see that as being something that's real important in terms of what I do for a living and protecting not only their kid, but every kid their kid goes to school with and daycare with and everything else. So if people, refuse immunizations, I often will tell them to find another doctor that shares that philosophy. But other than that, they pick you, you're stuck with them.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. I didn't know that it didn't. I always thought it did work both ways. And why?
Oh, if only. Jesus
Christ. That's great. This is that's funny, is that I think it's interesting in a world where, we're talking about, privatized healthcare sucks, is that that doesn't sound too privatized to me. That doesn't, if
now
you're
that's another reason I went into pediatrics, Justin. My kids, my patients, if they're little shit bags, I send them on their way at the age of 20. But in internal medicine, you just got to wait for those shit bag patients to die.
Well, can you offer some tidbits? Because that's kind of, I feel that as a parent, I've had moments, even though my awareness of hanging around doctors and nurses and stuff when I was growing up, I've had questions that I was afraid that I didn't want them to come across like I was second guessing or challenging what the doctor thought, because I've always had a respect for the knowledge of the profession, but I like to be educated about it. I would like to know, maybe 10% of what you have in your knowledge base, because I imagine, much like most professions too, that there is a reoccurring theme. Like there, as much as we like to think that we're individuals, you probably have 90% of your patients are coming to see you for the same thing pretty frequently. And then you have your little anomalies. Am I wrong on that?
Right. I forget. And you mentioned that your son has respiratory stuff.
Yeah.
I see every kid has like one weak system when they get sick. Some kids get it in their chest. Some kids get ear infections. Some kids break out into hives. Some kids puke and have diarrhea. So it seems, and it's not, and there's not a lot of overlap. You know, the kids who have asthma and frequent bronchitis, I don't see for ear infections all that often and so on.
Okay.
So it's kind of funny that, you know, kids kind of exhibit different viruses differently, you know, and it always seems to be the same kind of thing that breaks down, you know.
But
you get to know kids after a while, and you get to know the parents, and the parents get to know me. And I think that, you know, we have an advice nurse that they can talk to, you know, anytime during the day and run questions by. And sometimes it's you know, newborn questions. You know, people are freaked out because, you know, they don't have you know, the grandparents, you know, don't live upstairs or next door or around the corner anymore. So they have questions, and they can call in with, you know, questions about, you know, feeding and poops and stuff. I tell parents before the baby's even born that they will call my office within the first month of the baby's life with a question about poops. And they all laugh, but they all call in that first 4 weeks about a poop question. It's never the right amount. It's too much. It's too little. It's too soft. It's too hard.
Yeah, that's great.
I say to them, as long as it's coming out and it doesn't have blood in it, I think we're okay. You know, green, yellow, brown, I don't care.
What is a way that you wish these patients that you call shitbag patients, what is a way that you wish that they would ask questions or edify themselves? Because that's what I'm trying to do, is I try to ask the doctor questions so I can kind of have a little bit of knowledge that they have so I can help them in what they're doing and help communicate with them better.
Yeah, you know what it is I think I do a good job of really explaining things because I give a lot of handouts, and I don't just say he's got an ear infection, here's some medicine. I kind of tell him how it happened, why it happened, and what it's going to take to get rid of it. So I like to think that, you know, when they walk out of the office, and every time, you know, one of the simplest things to do is just every time the kid's at the office, you know their weight, tell the parents what the dose of Tylenol and Motrin is. I don't want to be bothered at 2 a.m. because the kid has a fever and they don't know how much Tylenol to give them.
Yeah.
So I make sure everybody knows what their kid's dose of Tylenol is when they leave the office, you know?
Yeah.
And they have to take some responsibility too, parents, you know? I get calls sometimes, you know, in the middle of the night, and they'll tell me a story that is concerning, you know, and maybe I think the kid has meningitis, and I tell them to go to the ER, and then they say to me, do I have to? And I'm like, that's not the answer you wanted, you know? And I'm sorry, but based on what you told me, yeah, I think you have to. You wanted me just to say everything's going to be okay so you could go back to sleep. I'm sorry, can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and we deal with this a lot too, and I know that I don't blame the healthcare professional. I blame more the society as a whole, is that I've dealt with it where we have like the same kind of on-call nurse that you can call in the middle of the night or whenever, and just they kind of gauge things and go yay or nay. But I find that with my particular healthcare provider that there's a lot of, yeah, you're going to need to go see the doctor. Like, you know, you call, and even though I kind of go, yeah, but I just have this specific question that I don't think he needs to go to a doctor. And I feel that what I'm doing is different from what you're saying, and here's why. Because I feel like that person has a certain level of covering their ass, because if they say, yeah, I'm sure everything is fine, and then all of a sudden my kid bites it, then I start bringing up malpractice suits. Because God forbid people just die for inexplicable reasons. Like, it always, there always has to be
a finger. Not too much in my line of work. Pediatrics is, knock on wood, that's not a frequent occurrence.
Right.
Thank God. But.
Right. But that's what that's also part of my point, is that it is, I think we're at a time in I don't know, human history or whatever, not to get too soapboxish, but that we've really got a handle on most things, you know, and that the expectation that it's going to be 100% effective is just a little pompous, I believe. Like, I mean, again, like everybody, knock on wood, my kids are both healthy, and I understand that I cannot have the perspective of someone that has had a child pass away or is unhealthy. But I just think that I wish that there was a level of big picture awareness that people could extend beyond, because I don't even think it's the people who lose a child that are ones that are on the front lines of this, you know, protest with signs and stuff like that. Right. I really think they're the ones that are just kind of like, oh man, yeah, and they're sad and they're hurt. But I think it's these other people that have predominantly healthy children that are like, fuck these doctors, they're not giving us good care. It's like, no, they are, but they're people that have a tool set that is not magic. They're not wizards and warlocks.
That's what I say, you know, my diploma says University of Connecticut School of Medicine, not Hogwarts School of fucking Wizardry.
Oh, Dr. J, I love you. All right, well, to change subjects again, just because I was curious, what is your opinion on circumcision? How say you? Is that a hygienic thing, or...?
I have seen some badly infected uncircumcised boys, and I've seen boys that have been circumcised that have had really botched circumcision. So I think right now the pendulum is swinging. The penis is swinging to the left.
Okay.
The American Academy of Pediatrics is now saying that there's enough evidence that there may be a medical benefit to circumcision in terms of preventing STDs and transmission of AIDS and HPV and things like that. So, you know, for hygienic purposes, I think they're kind of leaning towards that. Although, you know, I think the problem is a lot of people think about it too much. And really what it comes down to is whatever people have been doing in their family, they probably should just continue, because you got a circumcised dad and then you get an uncircumcised baby boy. They don't know what the fuck to do with that thing.
Yeah. Well, that's what I am. My grandfather is uncircumcised. My dad was uncircumcised. I am uncircumcised, and both of my sons are uncircumcised. And it's interesting.
That's as good of a reason to do or not do it as anything else, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. And that was because I was actually shocked, because our OB, when we talked to him, is that my dad had a situation. In fact, I have like a tiny scar to this day or whatever, that he actually had to grab the doctor by the arm because he had the bell on me and the scalpel and was about to start circumcising me. And he goes, I said no. But what I like is that my dad, I go, because you wanted me to be like you. And my dad was like, no, it was like an extra $75. I don't need to pay that shit. Like... So my dad didn't give a shit about my dick, but he goes, listen, I went my whole life and it was fine. So he's like, fuck it. I'm not paying $75 for something I don't think it needs to happen. And our OB told us that he goes, well, you know, we had this wonderful, like, kind of Filipino guy. And he was like, well, you know, some people do it, some people don't do it. It doesn't matter either way. It's up to you if you want to be like you. He goes, I don't do it anymore because there's no real health benefit, in my opinion. He goes, so if you want it done, then you can have it done. But I have another doctor do it, because I feel like, why make the baby cry? Like, which I was like, oh, well, okay. Because I just wanted to make sure that I didn't have to, like, grab him, because it wasn't important to me, but it was really important to my wife that he looked like me, so that he didn't feel like he was weird or different, or that wasn't a conversation that needed to be had. All
and
I know,
no way at your age you're getting it done to match up. So
yeah, exactly. And all I knew is that, in my opinion, I have no perspective on the other side of the fence, but I found that I was a lot more sensitive than, you know, your average dude, I guess, you know, because mine was always covered, and then anytime the skin was pulled back, I was like, whoa, easy, tiger. Like, the first time I got a BJ from a girl with braces was not a fun experience. That turned me off for a very long time. I was like, who wants this? Jesus Christ, please stop. Like,
it's an eye opener.
So, but my thought is that he was telling me that they were more and more saying that it was only for religious or cultural reasons as opposed to health benefits. So
at that point, probably when,
this would have been 5 years ago,
right? 5 years ago, it's definitely changed, because for most of my career, American Academy of Pediatrics just had a, you know, a statement saying it's, you know, medically okay to do it, but it may not be necessary, and it really is the parent's choice. And now they're kind of leaning towards maybe it should be done. But again, in 10 years, it's going to swing back the other way.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, and I wasn't doing that. It's not like I was going to freak out and go, we got to get our kids circumcised. So that way they'll never get syphilis.
Right.
And on a similar subject, what is your stance on breastfeeding?
Oh, well, unlike circumcision, where nobody can make up their mind what to do, I've never read a bad article about breast milk. So yeah, it's all good for the kids. And I think most moms, you know, go into it saying they're going to give it a shot and see how it goes. And that's probably a good attitude. And just, you know, they have to relax a little bit because it takes 4 or 5 days for the milk to come in. And if they know the baby's going to lose like 10% of their birth weight in the first couple days because she's not producing much, and they can get past that first 5 days, you know, of the baby not getting much, being hungry, crying all the time, nipples bleeding and cracked and hurting, well, then, hey, go ahead and keep going.
Well, that's my other part of my question is that I have a theory that I don't know if this is your area of expertise, but I would appreciate your opinion on it, is that as we lean towards a civilization where, you know, this natural way of doing it, well, I'm all for medical benefits and all that stuff, and I just feel like, though, that there is an element that is starting to slip away from parenting in general, where people are kind of growing up where they don't have – parenting isn't something that is passed along as something you need to be aware of. You know what I mean? Like a mama bear will take a bear cub and show the bear cub how to hunt and how to find salmon during the right time of year. That I feel like this is an element of parenting that is being glossed over, and we're starting to raise people that grow up not knowing common sense style things, and that the trickle down effect of that becomes people that have this more disconnected perspective when it comes to their children, not because they're not interested, but because they're just not educated. And then what happens is that because, just like with most things, what human beings don't know, they fear. And so it starts to escalate this thing, like what you deal with on a day-to-day basis, is these parents going, I don't know what the hell is going to happen. His poop is weird. And, you know, things that you should, I feel, just be able to just know.
Right.
I mean, do you think I'm crazy with saying that?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And a lot of it has to do with just, you know, the generationally, the grandparents, great-grandparents, aunts, uncles aren't around as close in proximity. People used to live in the same town, the same neighborhoods, you know. People are disconnected, so you don't have grandma right there saying, oh, it's a yellow poop, don't worry about it, it's nothing to worry about, you know. Same with the, you know, sucking out the nose. Don't go to Google to find out how many times to suck out the nose. Talk to your mother. How many times you suck out your nose?
Well, see, and that I see. This is why I'm glad I brought this up, because I think you've hit on a very interesting point in that what this Google society, I think, has made is that there's a perspective from new parents that look at their parents and go, well, I know what you did to me, but they're adding on to this like little bullshit, because everybody has a little thing of like, oh, my parents was a little stupid because of this.
Right.
And that they have this distrust for their parent. There's like, I've got this better than you. You were living in the stone age of parenting, and now we have this modern era of doulas and shit.
Yeah, but look, you made it through, okay? You survived. Yeah. You're an adult. You have a child of your own now. I guess your parents did a pretty good fucking job not knowing anything, huh?
Yeah, exactly, yes. And so I never would have thought of that, but I do think that that almost adds to the cocktail a little bit, making it a little more bitter, in that you, instead of going to grandma or mom or dad and say, what should I do, you go to the computer, because the computer is a far more credible, non-emotional reaction to
with real good information on it everywhere you go.
The same place you can find health tips on your child, you can also see tranny sex and on a dime. Like, if you want that. Maybe that's
sometimes
what...
on the same website. It's a niche website.
Here's what another part of my question is, this, because I've heard other moms that say that they don't want to breastfeed because of what it does to their boobs, and they like it makes them saggy or more droopy. And I don't know if this is more of like an OB question or if it's something that you're aware of. Is that, do you know if that is a side effect of breastfeeding?
It can be. Sometimes a little sucker will suck the life out of you. But but that's why God invented plastic surgeons, right? So really.
Oh, Dr. J, you are the best. Well, I have a question from a listener.
Okay.
I'll read. This is an email that came in, and she says, my five-year-old daughter is terrified. And this is what I think is interesting, because I don't know, and my apologies if I am misrepresenting your email, Tiffany, but I do think that this speaks to kind of what you were talking about with the gluten content in the communion wafer.
Right.
But you tell me. My five-year-old daughter is terrified of dogs and cats. When we go to someone's house, she wants to be carried until she is certain that there are no dogs and cats. Is there anything that we can do? We have good friends who have two dogs, and she won't go over there unless the dogs are locked up. I feel bad asking, even though they don't mind and do it without us even asking. But other times, we're at a different friend's house, and since they have a little dog, they just say things like, she won't hurt you, and don't really do anything to keep the dog away. There are so many instances where we make our kids do something they don't want to do, eat their vegetables. But is a fear of dogs one of those things?
It's a good question, and it's not something I haven't been asked before, because kids do have fears, they're not rational fears, so you can't really talk to them and explain to them why they shouldn't be afraid. It's just an internal type of thing. There's a good book called Freeing Your Child from Anxiety. It's Ooh. Written by a guy named Chansky is the author, and I recommend that book to a lot of my parents whose kids have fears, because it kind of gives them perspective as to why they're thinking the way they are, and it gives them constructive things they can do to kind of help them through that. There's also, 5-year-olds are tough, like I said, because their fears are kind of irrational fears, but 11, 12-year-old kids with a lot of anxiety benefit from cognitive behavioral therapy, kind of working through the fears and anxieties, reprocess the way their brain always comes to the worst conclusion. Mm-hmm. At 5 though, protecting her from those type things. I mean, my daughter, my older one, had lots of fears, but she's the only one I ever knew who was afraid of buttons. I had I'd wear a shirt with buttons on it, and one time she gave me a hug and her hair got tied around my button and it pulled her hair, and it's about 3 years before I could get hugged again when I was wearing a button shirt.
Wow.
So kids get freaked out by little things. They usually will outgrow it with time. It's not something that I think, you need to force on them if it's, something that is optional. I mean, kids who kick and scream when you drop them off at daycare, they do that for your benefit, and they're fine 10 minutes after you leave. But, a fear like of dogs or the thunder or, those kind of things at 5 are, really common. So just reassuring them. And like I said, if you're not someone that shares, the anxiousness gene, the book Freeing Your Child from Anxiety can give parents some perspective on what their, kids are thinking.
Yeah, put another tool in their tool belt, if you would.
Yeah.
I like that, because my pediatrician, when we talked about how Jacob, even if we try to give him like a little Sudafed to, give him a decongestant and he just vomits it up, she kind of said, she's like, well, while the decongestant will help him sleep better and help him get healthier faster,
right,
there's nothing that's going to become fatal about his situation. However, and she has to say this because she's used to parents that, would continue to do it, understandably so. I'm not getting up on a high horse, but she's saying, don't continue to give him the medicine if all it does is make him vomit, because the vomiting will dehydrate him, and then that could really cause some serious issues. And so I think kind of what you're saying in this instance is that you kind of just have to weigh, like, how bad is it? And is it something? And if it really is that traumatic, then you as a parent can go, yeah, all right, well, we'll wait. We'll wait and maybe tackle it again when they're 8 and at least the same size as the dog.
Right.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's no rational way to talk to a 5-year-old to get them past that. It's all just experience,
Man, kudos to you. That is really impressive to me that I started this off going, I think this is more of a psychological question, and I feel bad for Tiffany now because.
Well, let me tell you, when I started 20 years ago, it was all ear infections and strep throat and all that stuff. But now it's all mental health stuff and depression and anxiety and all of this stuff, and just it's sad to see that kids are taking on the burdens that adults take on at the ages of 7 and 10 and 12. Yeah.
Now, do you have a theory as to why that is changing, or is it just I
just think there's too much information out there, and people talk, you know, my parents never talked about, you know, money stuff. They never fought in front of me, you know, but kids are exposed to traumatic events. You know, parents lose jobs, and, you know, they sense when things aren't going right, and they, you know, may not say it outward, but their behavior is going to reflect that stress.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's funny because my grandfather recently passed away, and I re-aired the episode that I did with him and my dad, and I talked about it where I said that, you know, I started this episode just to have him tell some redneck stories because he was kind of like a redneck leprechaun and a funny character. And he grew up, he was growing up in the Great Depression is when he was born, and he grew up on a farm in Texas, and he literally, his toys were eaten corn cobs, like, you know, whatever we would throw away at the end of a picnic, he would use as horses. And those horses that he was playing with would also have to be taken from him when somebody had to go out into the outhouse and use it as toilet paper.
There you go.
Right? And so he tells me, and so I was like, wow, that's interesting. And one of the things he pointed out, though, is I go, was that a bummer to grow up knowing you were poor? And he was like, we didn't know it.
That's right. Like, kids don't know. That's all they know. It's their life. They don't know.
Exactly. And I was like, wow, how interesting. And I thought, again, it was like a generational thing, that it's because he grew up on a regional thing, because he grew up on a farm. And then at the end of the episode, I said to him, I said, well, do you think you could be a parent today? And when he said no, I thought he was going to talk about, you know, what you think a stereotypical old man would say, no, because the pants are big and rap music, and right. Whatever, Elvis Presley ruined America, whatever, you know. But actually what he said was one of the most profound things I've ever heard, and he was always great at this, is that he goes, I don't think I could raise a kid today. And he said exactly what you said. He goes, there's so much stuff out there hitting them that how can you compete with that as a parent, where a child grows up thinking that they need everything. And how do you teach them that they don't need everything? He goes, that's a challenge I'm lucky that I didn't have to face. And and like you said, so much information is out there. And I would be curious to see if 15 years from now there isn't a study that is done or something that comes out that says that, you know, wow, it was a great thing that – and maybe it's just a growing pain that kids are starting to go through, and that eventually they become desensitized to it and it just becomes normal life. I don't know, but – that's interesting. So Freeing Your Child from Anxiety is a book you recommend. And that was another question I had for you, is there a resource or a book out there? Say I'm a new parent and I want to avoid not knowing all the information and I want to educate myself so that I know what's really a fever for an infant and what, right. What amount of pooping is acceptable. Is there a Cliff Notes out there that you have? And if not, when are you going to write it and publish it so that we could sell it through our website?
Well, my first writing endeavor is going to be a puberty book for boys in a comic book form.
Okay. Perfect, to make it accessible.
You got to do something, because they ain't going to read a puberty book unless it's got like Captain Puberty or something like that in there. But you know, that's my first thing. But the best book out there, and I recommend it to my parents, the American Academy of Pediatrics has a series of books, and the first book in the series is Caring for Your Baby Birth to Age 5. Mm-hmm. And it's a great resource. I mean, parents need to have a, you know, instruction manual of some sort, and that's one that I think really gives them all the information they need about illnesses and developmental milestones and baby behavior and stuff like that. And then the next book in the series is Your School Age Child, and then they have one for like your adolescent, 12 to 18. So it's a good series, you know, that I recommend to parents in the practice.
Where do you stand on like the what to expect when you're expecting and what to expect from your toddler and that series, and even like the Baby Wise and all those? Do you have a stance on?
Well, I think anything that you know, is, gives helpful information. I'm not familiar with the Baby Wives ones, but the what to expect ones are fine. And you know, Dr. Spock has still got some relevance, and you know, there's a couple of others, but you know, the American Academy of Pediatric one is, you know, written by pediatricians, and the ones, you know, the guys that kind of make the recommendations and the rules for vaccines and stuff and set up all of the, you know, protocols and things. So I think it's a good resource, and it gets updated frequently. So, you know, it's a good one.
Awesome. Well, that is that's a full show that we just did, you and I, Dr. J. So unless there's any other thing that you would like to either A, get off your chest, or B, say, hey, parents, do this or whatever, we can wrap it up. Is there anything else you want to offer up? Or I mean, we talked a lot.
I think we've said it all. We'll have to save stuff for next time, huh?
Yeah, I cannot tell you how much this means to me, and I look forward to doing this monthly with you. So if you guys have any more questions for Dr. J, please send them to questions@thedadpodcast.com. And next time we have Dr. J on, we will have him address all your questions. Here's the thing. I mean, I'm open to it, but I didn't want to take your existing patient roster and multiply it by thousands of people, like, bombarding you via Facebook, Twitter. Or
oh, good email. God, no.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
One thing I haven't started in my office is I have an advice nurse. I pay human beings to answer parents' questions. I don't want to get goddamn emails.
Okay, good. So then I'm not being insensitive to people being able to contact you. Or what if they wanted to, you know, be able to, like, purchase your comedy CD or something like that? Is there a way that they could do that?
The standuppediatrician.com.
Perfect. Excellent. Well, thank you again, Dr. J. Soute. On behalf of my new friend, Dr. J, this is Justin Worsham saying, stay frosty.